Joining us on the phone from the Enchanted West Coast, just off of Canada's West Coast, Haida Gwaii, is Susan Musgrave, a very distinguished poet who is shortlisted for the Griffin Prize, which is one of the world's most generous poetry awards. It has been around for two decades now and has one of the greatest international prizes for a single book of poetry written in or translated into English, leading up to a prize worth $130,000. Now, what makes this very exciting is that the six finalists, including Susan, will be reciting their poetry at a very special event June 7th at Kerner Hall. Here to tell us all about it is Susan herself. Welcome to the Classical Jukebox.
Well, thank you very much. Good to be here.
I want to just touch upon this upcoming event, June 7th at Kerner Hall. What kind of feeling can we expect from the six finalists? What kind of poetry are you bringing? What can an audience member expect at this event?
Well, anytime there are that many poets reading, you're going to get a good taste of what's out there. I always suggest that if people haven't read poetry before, they get a good poetry anthology, and that way you can, you know, soon find out what speaks to you and what doesn't. Because there's so many poets writing, it's always hard to know who to read unless you have friends who recommend a book.
Right.
If you're a poet yourself and you read reviews and you just kind of, it's like anything, you have to immerse yourself in the world that you're interested in order to keep up with what's going on. It changes so quickly.
It changes quickly, and it's such a unique, deep, personal, inward journey to, experience life through symbolic metaphors, bringing, your own natural emotions, mental, linguistics into this media.
Well, I've written poetry, I think, since I was a disturbed teenager. I thought the meme was, I'd like to be a teenager again so that I can do all the bad things I did, only I've got some new ideas.
Right.
I think when we're teenagers, we tend to write angsty poetry. You know, somebody
yes.
breaks your heart. That's always was good for a few poems. It always
well, I've yet extreme. To meet a teenager not somehow disturbed.
Well, exactly. Well, I think we didn't. I knew that I wasn't. Well, I knew I was disturbed, but my parents were more disturbed. So there you go.
Right. Well, there's that. The
teenagers.
Other side of the coin. Right. Right. So at 14,
parents.
you rose up out of high school, ran away, and your journey started far off in the railway tracks, and that led you to far off places. Kind of making a full circle back to this enchanted Vancouver Island. Can you tell us a little bit about some of these highlights, things that kind of stick out right away in your journey, maybe some memories or a story or two?
Well, I did leave home when I was quite young. My parents had me committed to a mental hospital. It was the 60s, and I think I ran away from home to go to a love-in in Stanley Park in Vancouver. And, of course, the mainland Canada was considered very far away from Vancouver Island and not safe at all. And it was kind of a loving time. I think if you run away now or you're on the street, you're in a very different situation.
For sure.
Everyone took care of you back then.
Yes.
But I didn't know what I was doing. I mean, I thought I did, but when I look back on it, poetry is what kept me always connected to everything, to people and to the planet, and just what I did to stay sane. And I wasn't really crazy. I Robin Skelton, who is a poet and who started the creative writing department in Victoria, came to visit me.
Oh, yeah.
He met my psychiatrist at a drinks party, and he said, he read my poetry, and he said, "Well, you're not mad, you're a poet." Well, I didn't think I was mad. Who thinks they're mad at 14? It's only in retrospect that you look back and think, oh, maybe I was actually just depressed, and you know, the atom bomb had been mentioned as a threat, and we would do duck and cover in school. So they seemed to be turbulent times. I think not compared to now, but it seemed for a 14-year-old that this was, things were scary out there. So poetry is, I read a lot of poetry. I was sent to the library as a punishment for kicking an apple core in line, I think, and I started reading the books of poetry on the shelf. And one was by Irving Layton, who is Canadian. I didn't know there were any Canadian poets because pretty well what we were taught was, you know, the Romantics and Wordsworth and Keats and Shelley. So I didn't realize you could be a poet, a published poet in Canada.
Pastoral, feel-good poetry, yes.
Yeah, yeah. So Irving Layton used four-letter words in his poetry, which is also astonishing because Tennyson didn't do that. And so it was opened up a new world for me. Not that I use four-letter words in poetry, but it was just a different... came from somewhere that Tennyson and Wordsworth didn't come from. It was modern. So that set, and I read Allen Ginsberg, I read Sylvia Plath, and mm-hmm. I think Robin Skelton gave me these books, and that kind of, I just knew I had found the people whose voices kind of spoke to me, that I got it on some level. Poetry isn't, we don't think less of ourselves because we can't hear the sounds that a bat makes. I think Houseman said this, and poetry is a certain way of seeing or hearing the world, and not everybody has it, but it doesn't mean they're lesser. It just means you don't have it. I mean, it's like being colorblind, or some people can't smell, some people have intense. Is it just different? So if you're tuned into poetry, you're really usually pretty tuned into it, and if you don't get it, then it must look like an absolute foreign language. It's hard work. I mean, I probably do between 30 and 50 drafts of a poem, but I love it. I love the war with words, where, you know, you're deciding whether "and" should go at the end of a line or at the beginning of the line. I would say at the beginning, but you know, there's a lot of craft and technique involved. And I didn't know this when I first started writing. I really just wrote with my ear, because having read Tennyson, and you know, coming from a long line when you're raised, I mean, I'm white Anglo-Saxon Protestant, which most of Canada was when I was growing up, it seems, except for the people we didn't acknowledge. There were many of them. But I lived in Victoria, and it was a very small world. And so I figured one of Robin's theories was that if you've had sort of poetry like Tennyson in your blood for generations, it's there naturally if you read it. Whereas if you come from a country that, you know, English isn't the first language, and there'd be poetry in that language, of course, but your ear is differently attuned. So it's hard for people who don't speak English as a first language to, or used to be, and I think that's all changed too, but to have feel the same kind of maybe natural rhythm for iambic pentameter or anything like that. It must have been very hard to come from Somalia and study Wordsworth when you'd never seen a daffodil in your life, you know. But we've definitely expanded internationally, and I think poetry is so many more things, so many more voices, so many more styles. It's much more inclusive now than it used to be.
Yeah, you mentioned Alfred Lord Tennyson, who is renowned for his structured meter, a kind of you know, rhythm throughout his output. And in a way, poetry is like music making. It's like a symphony of words, and you're putting them together.
And then you have to think of line breaks, the biggest thing. And
yes,
again,
breathing.
Poets, it's fascinating. Where do you break the line? Somebody asked me that yesterday, and I said, well, there are different ways, you know, but those are the things that when I teach poetry, I mostly focus on things like line breaks, because they say that prose is a sentence art and poetry is a line art.
Fantastic. Where do you break the line? That is the question our finalists may be asking at this event. Griffin Poetry Prize, 6 finalists. Don't miss this Wednesday, June 7th at Kerner Hall. You can find out all the details at griffinpoetryprize.com. Good luck to you, Susan. Enjoy
thank you so
much. Beautiful west coast of Canada. Yep. Thank you for joining me. Thank you for sharing some of your thoughts on what goes on in your mind when you write some of these gems. So,
thank you very much. Yeah. I'm looking forward to coming to Toronto, I must say. That's the best part of being shortlisted. I'm going to a Blue Jays game with my granddaughters.
Oh, right on.
I've never been to one, and that's what they wanted to do. And their mom said, no, we're celebrating your grandmother. Of course they're going to go to a Blue Jays game, and we're going with
fantastic.
Them,
so. Good luck to you and the Blue Jays in that case.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right. Take care, Susan. Bye for now.
Bye-bye now.